So greetings, guys. Martin King again here with SkilledTradeRescue.com. Today I have a guest, and his name is Blake Howe, and he is a recruiter, I believe. We're going to hear a lot from him in a few minutes. And this series that I'm doing is to talk about skilled trades and hear from real people that are actually working in skilled trades in various activities. And Blake, I think, has an interesting story I wanted to share with everybody. And hopefully what my goal is from this series is that you guys walk away with actionable intelligence, habits, things that, you know, you can put to life or put to use in your own life in skilled trades. And also, I'm trying to see if we can get the word out to folks maybe that have graduated from school, whether that be you're getting out into the workforce for the first time, or you're a college graduate that is thinking something's missing and you're starting to hear a little bit of buzz about skilled trades and what's going on, and you want to hear more about it. So we need more people in skilled trades, and Blake is going to tell his story about that. So welcome, Blake. How you doing today, man?
I'm doing fantastic, Martin. I appreciate you having me on the show and taking the time to have a interview with me.
Yeah, awesome, awesome. So we, I think we connected initially, what, on LinkedIn, I think. I put out some, hey, I need people in skilled trades. I think you were one of the first to respond back, and I finally got you on the show.
Yeah, you know, the power of the internet. So
connected,
and here we are. So it's great. I'm really happy that we were able to do that and make the connection and have the time to meet up.
Yeah. So you are a skilled trades recruiter. And I think a lot of people know what recruiters are, but why don't you give us sort of a bio? I have up on the screen right now, which will be part of the production, your LinkedIn history.
Okay.
But tell us a little bit about what you got going on. What's happening?
Yeah, I mean, you know, as far as what I do personally, I have a background in construction and skilled trades as a young person growing up. My dad was an electrical contractor in California for 40 years, as well as a licensed general contractor. So I grew up working in the trades myself. So, you know, it's great to kind of give back and doing what I'm doing now in recruiting. And basically what I do is I'm a regional recruiting manager for NIT Building Solutions. So we recruit specifically for the HVAC mechanical contracting, as well as electrical and plumbing fields. So we do work with some general construction companies as well. And essentially what we are is we are a resource for companies that are looking to build their businesses with the best talent available. And what we do is we, you know, meet candidates that are anywhere from installers to HVAC technicians to field plumbers, all the way up to, you know, chief financial officers and, you know, regional vice presidents within our industry. Mm-hmm. So if they have a good background, we interview them on our end and I qualify them based on their expertise and kind of what their motivation is career-wise, what their career goals are and what they want to do moving forward. And then ideally we get a match on our end and we help make that introduction.
So are you guys national or are you regional?
Yeah, so we're a national company. I handle the Colorado to California market, including Texas. And then we have other recruiters that handle the Southeast and the Northeast and what have you. So my market's the you know, one of the biggest in the country, being California included, and Texas as well. Those are some of the biggest job markets in the country, as well as Arizona, which is just amazing. Nowadays, they got, you know, $50 billion worth of data centers and critical environments and semiconductor factories that are being built out there. So it's a pretty hot job market as well.
Yeah. So I would imagine, so you have to develop two relationships, right? So you guys are constantly looking for employers that are maybe looking to expand their horizon. You know, most employers, you know, they've got signs running around on their trucks, right? And they've got,
yeah,
you know, they've got a local market that they're trying to attract. And it's sort of a kind of a feeding frenzy out there. It has been for decades where,
yeah, you know,
contractors are trying to steal talent from their competitors. That's one way to do it, right?
Yep.
And then
that is one way.
And then I think so the niche I see you guys filling would be where you've got a contractor that knows the value of getting a quality candidate, and they're looking for maybe candidates that are moving into the area, right? New talent coming in. Is that kind of Is that kind of the best scenario for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, kind of getting onto your first point in that developing the relationships, you know, anybody who's, you know, good at what they do, regardless of, you know, their career path, is good at developing relationships. And what we pride ourselves in is developing relationships with, you know, people that run companies. It could be your, you know, $3.5 million plumber down the street that is doing commercial work, you know, what have you, that's a smaller shop, or it could be your $2 billion, you know, largest design build mechanical contractor in the Western United States. And what we try and do to differentiate ourselves is develop relationships with people that actually run those companies so right. that we can be a really strategic resource. And then on the other side, you know, with the candidate side, what we try and do is build those relationships as well with, you know, the guy driving around in an, you know, an HVAC truck van doing service work or what have you, running projects, doing a, you know, mechanical or plumbing project, you know, it could be a hospital, could be a $30 million hospital. You know, we're trying to develop relationships on both sides so we can be a resource for both people and make the best match moving forward for someone's career, as well as the company looking to build their company in, you know, whatever way they're trying to, whether it be on service, construction, what have you. You know, that's what we try and build those relationships. And as far as the talent, you know, it could be local talent. You know, it could be, especially the last year or so, year and a half, everybody's moving, you know, the mass exodus that you kind of hear out of California or what have you, that people are moving to other areas like Arizona and Texas, Florida, what have you. You know, that's part of it. But for the most part, we generally work with people that are already in, within the market.
Okay. Okay. Now, are you servicing both on the contractor side? Are you servicing both union and non-union shops?
Yeah. So we work with both union and non-union shops. The thing for the most part, you know, on the union side of things, we are working on roles that are not necessarily within the union where they can go to the hall, you know, and get a guy or a gal. However, we do place people that are field personnel within the union. It just depends on the role, you know, your general, you know, HVAC service technician, you know, kind of the general run of the mill, so to speak, you know, they're going to go to the hall for that. Mm-hmm. However, if it's your, you know, if it's your high level, you know, chiller mechanic that is, you know, making $50, $60, $70 an hour, you know, and those guys are tough to find, you know, we're gonna get on that.
Hey guys, quick announcement. If you have not stopped into our website at skilltraderescue.com, please do that. On the home page here, you will see that we have the Join the Movement email list. If you haven't signed up, please consider doing that. We have some amazing guests lined up for the podcast. I'm going to be getting the stories out of successful technicians and business owners in skilled trades. These are not just HVAC people. These are going to be from across the skilled trade spectrum. And my hope is that I'm going to be able to draw out of these people the things that have worked in their careers amazingly well, and the things that if they had a chance to talk to their younger self, what they would tell them not to do. So I want to share all that stuff with you. And if you sign up, you're going to be the first to know when we drop those new podcast episodes. Also, coming soon, we have the BEST workshop. It's a 5-day automated email workshop. However, you're going to give content to us through that workshop. You're going to get one-on-one feedback from our instructors, and we're looking to better your career. I've been teaching the BEST process for many, many years, about 2 decades, one-on-one, and I'm going to be trying to do that to the masses through this workshop. It's totally free. All you got to do is sign up, and as soon as you do that, you'll get alerts on your email as soon as these new podcasts come in, as well as the BEST workshop. So if you check it out, I will put a link to the website on the show notes for this episode today. So check it out. So in other words, let me unpack what you said. So let's say hypothetically, you've got a specialized technician, a chiller tech, control tech, that may be working for a non-union shop in California. Mm-hmm. And they decide that they're going to move to Texas or Florida or some other state. And you have a somehow you find out about this technician, you have a relationship with a union shop. Because of the high demand for that technician, that union shop may induct, if you will, assuming that they have the credentials, right? That they may induct that individual into the union and move them up quite quickly within the union scale, right?
Yeah, so I mean, that's exactly right. So especially on the control side of things, you know, you have the high level controls engineer. They might be, you know, Tritium Niagara and 4 certified or what have you. You know, Distech GSX. They might have a real specialty to them. And high level programming. Yeah, you know, within the union, we generally do get on those roles. However, it's not relegated to relocation. It's most of our placements are not relocations. They're within the market because logistically the relocations are pretty tough. People sometimes have to sell a house.
Yeah.
They got to move family. They got kids that got to come out of school.
Right.
It's tough on our end. So we try and, you know, work with more of the local town, but getting to your point, as far as within the union, that's exactly the type of roles that we work on within the union is your controls engineers, you know, your chiller mechanics, your master plumbers who are just absolute studs in the field that are hard to get, you know, and that's when they come to us to go get that person. And you know, like I said, 90% of the time it's within the local market.
Yeah. Okay. So labor in general, skilled trade labor in general, what kind of trends are you seeing out there, Blake? Let's say we'll put the aperture at about the last 5 years. What kind of trends are you seeing out there on your end of the business?
Yeah. So the biggest thing, I mean, within the last 5 years is the workforce and the demographic of that workforce. You know, I think I just saw a recent article. I may have posted it on LinkedIn about, you know, the silver tsunami or something, to where, you know, the older generation. And I think the trend, at least from what I'm seeing lately over the last couple years, is there's been a lot more action, promotion, and interest around getting the younger generation involved. You know, and we work, you know, to be clear, we work with people that are at all age categories within the industry. I will work with someone who is at retirement age, you know, if they have a good background and they have good motivation. It just really depends on the person. You know, as nothing, I have no problem with any sort of demographic, but as far as the industry trends, you know, 5 years ago, the median age was pretty high. You know, just from your basic plumber in the field might be 55 years old. 56, you know, a lot of miles on the chassis at that point, you know, if you're a mechanic, you're climbing ladders and carrying motors all day, you know, compressors, it's challenging and the body breaks down. So, you know, the trend is what I like to see lately, what's been great is a lot of the interest generation, you know, not only within the trade, within guys like you and I, you know, industry experts, but even in the media, they're covering a lot more of the, you know, trade school as being a real good option for people that instead of going to college.
Finally, they're finally starting to talk about it, right?
Exactly. And again, I mean, I went to, you know, college, and I can say, you know, for the most part, my degree was pretty much was worthless, you know, on my end, my bachelor's degree. However, you know, my dad, you know, he went to high school. It was a trade school. You know, and they did sheet metal, they did all, you know, electrical, all this stuff. So, you know, back in the day, that was kind of the, you know, kind of the norm. It was just a part of things, you know, back then. So finally, you know, people are really, you know, they're really seeing the value of, you know, going to trade school and going, getting that specialized education instead of, you know, going to college, not to mention you could be working while you're going to school, earning a living, and you get out of that school, whatever the apprenticeship is, whether it's, you know, HVAC or electrical plumbing, you get out with not only a skill, but not $50,000, $60,000 in debt, you know. So finally, they are seeing that value.
Yeah. Amen. Yeah. It's finally, we're seeing a lot of activity about, you know, conversations going on about, you know, skilled trades. And I've been hammered on this for like the last, I don't know, since I started this series. I started about 3 months ago on this, interviewing people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what's really interesting is, and guys, if you heard my podcast, you've heard me bang on this a little bit. So just kind of shake your head and say, yeah, Martin, I know. Anyway, I'm going to say this again. So all the media tends to, and even the colleges, even in the high schools, you know, pretty much the whole, anybody talking about skilled trades, they use pretty much one reference and one reference only to how much money the service technician, skilled trade person at large can make as a career.
Right.
And that's all based on the Bureau of Labor Statistics. That's where they get their data from. And I've done a lot of research on exactly what that data is, where it comes from, and how it's collected. And what I found is that the data that's been reported and the data that's being quoted to parents of kids getting ready to graduate high school and such, it's about half what they're really getting paid.
Yeah.
And finally, you know, I did an interview with a guy named Misha Fisher. He's a economist for Angie, or it used to be Angie's List, now it's Angie. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he actually, super, super smart guy. And he dug into this a little bit. He didn't actually come out and say, you know, like I've been saying, that the Bureau of Labor Statistics is a bunch of BS. You know, didn't say that. But right. He shared some information about what's real, and, you know, some real positive things based on real data about skilled trades. You know,
right. So. Yeah. You know, I completely agree with you. I'll see on, you know, LinkedIn or what have you, I'll see an article or a post that just, you know, has that exact breakdown. If you're an electrician, you're going to make this much or that. Every time I see those, I say, man, that's way low.
Hey guys, I have an exciting announcement. We just recently made some updates to our three most popular online courses at processchilleracademy.com. If you're a technician that's looking to improve your skills a little bit, maybe get some specialized training to be of more value to your customers and your employer, or if you are an employer, a contractor that is looking to augment your existing in-house training with online training that can be accessible from any device, this is a really great opportunity. Just go to processchilleracademy.com, just scroll down on the homepage and you will see the course area. If you go into the course page, you will see that we are currently, for a limited time, we have a promo code of ChillerPro that will save you 25% on any one of these courses. So I hope you check it out, and I'm looking forward to seeing you in class. Yeah, where did they get that from?
Yeah. Yeah, right. And I mean, even, you know, and you're not even including, you know, any overtime or anything like that. I mean, you know, when I see the hourly wages, I'm like, man, I'm working with guys, and we're national, and we talk within the office, and we're all saying that these numbers are much lower, and regardless of the area. And then you got to include the overtime aspect. I mean, I'm working with companies now, believe it or not, that on the HVAC side of things, they're paying techs from the moment they leave their house to the moment they get home. You know, think about that for a minute. You know, not only that, they're paying them during their lunch hour.
Yeah.
So, you know, you get the van, you get the gas card, you get the tools, you get the benefits, and also you get paid from the time you leave your house to the time you get home at night. You know, it could be an 11-hour day. You know, normally, you know, even without an overtime, and you're busy on a job or what have you. So, I mean, talk about how much that adds up.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty amazing the total package of some of these people, you know. Right.
So without naming names, so let's say, what's your number one recruitment state? California, I would say, probably.
Yeah, California by far. I mean, I'm pretty, you know, sophisticated in my data that I keep on my own as far as, you know, what cities and what areas are the hottest. California, definitely the hottest area. You know, L.A., San Jose, San Francisco has cooled down a bit over the last couple of years since the pandemic. You know, a lot of the mechanical contractors that I worked with had, you know, they took care of Google, they took care of LinkedIn, they took care of Facebook. Well, when all those people went away, you know, you don't need the maintenance, you know, they're not on those projects. So yeah, California, LA, San Jose, Texas, and Arizona has definitely been one of the hottest areas the last year and a half or so.
So let's just take a drill down a bit. So you got an HVAC journeyman, you know, totally self-sustaining, non-union tech. Mm-hmm. What's a range, you know, just a general range on what the package would be for a guy like that, maybe like in an annual income, roughly?
Yeah, roughly. I mean, if you're talking, within the state of California, you're solid journeyman, you know, 10-year, 15-year guy or gal, you know, is going to be, depending on, again, a lot of different factors, $35 to $50 an hour.
Right.
You know, I'm working with a couple individuals in Los Angeles, you know, $48 an hour.
Yeah.
And that's not including overtime. It's not including the van or the truck or anything like that. So, you know, the total package at the end of the year would depend on how much overtime they work. But as far as a base rate, you know, for in the Southern California area or Northern County, it's going to be the same, you know, that 35 to 50. Mm-hmm. Other markets, it would be more like 25 to 45. Mm-hmm. In Texas, Arizona, that even in Colorado, I mean, $45 an hour for your solid HVAC guy.
Or yeah, guy. That's a lot better than the 15 to 20 that they're reporting.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I said, when I see the 15, I'm like, man, I'm not working with anybody. Yeah. I have placed individuals at $15 to $20 an hour, but they were your 3-year installer, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Did you get any video breakup on your end?
No.
Yeah, mine stopped. My video's not working.
Oh, I can see you just fine.
Am I moving? Oh, there we go.
Yeah, now yeah, there you go. All right. Some internet, man.
Yeah. Oh, here it goes again. It's glitching a little bit on my end. So.
Yeah, it should be okay. I'm not normally this application will give me an error message or something when something's going totally sideways. So I haven't seen anything like that yet. So we should be okay.
Well, as long as you see me on my end, I'm okay. Yeah. But here yeah, on my end, it's not moving or nothing. So.
Yeah, you're crystal clear here. So
okay, perfect.
So wow, this is really interesting. So what are some of the biggest challenges, Blake, that the skilled trade industry is faced with? I think you alluded to some of that, finding the labor, that kind of thing. You know, besides the basic stuff, what are some of the headwinds, if you will, that skilled trades are experiencing and are bound to continue to experience over the next decade or so?
Yeah, I mean, I think I hit on it a little bit as far as the demographics. I mean, I try and push it myself with my own, you know, social influence and networking professionally is getting more people involved in skilled trades and understanding the benefits and, you know, not only the benefits monetarily, being able to provide for yourself or your family, pretty much anywhere you go in the country, but, you know, the pride of work. You know, being, you know, having a job, finishing it and being a skilled tradesman and doing well at it, you know, is a lot. There's a lot more to the job than just the money part. However, definitely, I think just getting more people involved, there has to be a huge push to get them trained and in school and within the workforce as quick as possible, because I think, you know, we're going to be in for as the older generation starts retiring, we're going to have a. We already have a bad, you know, pretty bad shortage. It's going to be mm-hmm. get even worse, you know.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of the, you know, obviously you mentioned relationships and you've got, you know, relationships with employers. That's basically your source of employment. And you're trying to, you know, you're a matchmaker basically, you know, between yep. the employer and the technicians that are out there. So besides the basics, you know, showing up to work on time, you know, keeping your driver's license clean,
yes.
the basic stuff. What are some of the traits, the habits, what are some of the core things that these employers are looking for in their, you know, in their superstars, you know, the ones that are technicians that are just the superstars of the company? What are some of the things they're looking for? Have they shared that with you?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. And you know, we discuss this all the time, you know, not only internally, but with the clientele. And I can tell you right off the bat, initially, the initial impression, let's say when I'm making an introduction, the immediate thing they look for is your work history. Okay. Have this individual, have they had 5 jobs in 6 years?
Right.
You know, initially, and I can say some, you know, especially during the 2020 and all that, you know, you had to move around. If the company lost a bunch of jobs, you had to get it, you know, you got to provide for your family. We understand right. that. However, there are people that continued employment through that phase and were, you know, it was no problem. However, initially the traits of the top people in the industry is a solid work history.
As in, okay, so what's the minimum? 2 years, 3 years, 5 years? What's sort of the number you look at?
Yeah, for? I mean, it really depends on what the series of jobs looks like. If they've been in their position now for 2 years and they had a position prior to that and they were in it for 4, and then before that, you know, 3 or 4, what have you, that's more of what you want to see as opposed to someone who is, you know, you even see people that have 3 jobs in 1 year. Three yeah. different companies, you know, right. and no matter who you are, whether, I mean, and we work with not only the field individuals, but, you know, project managers, senior PMs, estimators, you know, and no matter who you are, no matter how good you are, if they see that work history, that initial snapshot, the initial 10 second, you know, that people have, the attention span people have days as far as looking at resumes. They see that jumping around. They see the different entries in on the resume. And that's a red flag to a lot of people. And I'm not saying every person that has jumped around is a red flag, but that's just initially to the employer. You know, one of the things that is something that jumps out of what I'm saying. And, you know, what we try and do, a good recruiter, what we'll try and do is talk to the individual and really advise them, you know, hey, is this really the best thing for you to do, is be looking for another job right now? You just got to this position, you know, last year. What's going on? Why are you looking? You know, so as far as, you know, not only the best practices on the employment side, the company side, the candidate side, you know, you see it a lot with the HVAC and the plumbers, the electricians, is on the field level guys jumping around a lot. And they may be moving from company A to company B for a dollar more an hour or what have you. And really, you really want to try and plan, not plan, but put in place your career goals, because you want to keep in mind that your ability to get hired is going to depend on your work history. And just for you to actually just get a conversation with a company, is going to depend on their initial snapshot of your resume. So if you've had 5 jobs in 4 years, it's going to be a tough time to get in front of them. Now, as far as a recruiter, a good recruiter will act as that cover letter to a company. If I have a relationship with a company and I'm talking to the president and I say, you know, hey, Joe, working with a guy or a gal, great skill set. They've jumped around. However, I recommend you really having a chat with them. You know, that's the advantage of working with someone like myself or anybody with NIT, is we're able to get you in front of someone that they may have passed on you in the first place because of your work history. However, it does take a big push, because no matter how good someone is, the company's initial response to someone jumping around is there's got to be something there. There's got to be a problem.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that have sort of, I guess, incentivized those jumps these days is, I don't know if a lot of your contractor customers are doing this, but I've seen a lot of it where these companies, they're so desperate for, you know, skilled techs. It didn't matter, electrician, plumbers, HVAC, didn't matter what it is. They did this back probably about a decade ago when, because I'm from the Bay Area originally.
Okay.
And the signing bonus game. And that, you know, you get somebody in their 20s, they got a bunch of kids.
Yeah.
Kids need braces, you know, whatever.
Oh, yeah.
That has a tendency, you know, you get a contractor, you know, let's say you've been on the job 6 months and then you need some cash, because a lot of these guys, a lot of technicians, no matter what you pay them, they're always broke.
Always looking for the next raise, for sure.
Yeah, so what ends up happening, they'll jump ship with their six-month outfit, not necessarily because they're unhappy or they're not getting fulfilled by working there, but they've got a shop down the street willing to, you know, pay $6,000 or $7,000 or $10,000. I've seen as high as $10,000 signing bonus. Now, they don't just write you a check on your first day of work, obviously. So Blake, that's a great message. You know, the technicians out there that are working, you want to make sure that, you know, even though you may see a grass is greener on the other side of the fence, you want to do a self-analysis on your current position, your current company, and you want to put into your calculation that the fact that I'm jumping could potentially down the road have an impact on opportunities, right?
Yeah. And, you know, and there's reasons behind everything. And some, you know, it goes back, it's kind of a balancing act, because a lot of, let's say, especially on the technician side, you know, some of the companies, you know, they're not doing regular review processes. They're not giving coaching and developing to the field level guys or gals, so that the technicians are forced to kind of go so that they can get a pay raise. You know what I mean? They haven't got a raise in a year, you know, and generally, you know, on the company side, you know, you have to ask yourself, are they giving reviews? Are they doing 30, you know, 90 day reviews, 6 month reviews, and having an opportunity to give this person a pay raise? And unfortunately, a lot of times they're not. So the technician is like, look, I need to make more money. I got to go to another company. And, you know, they're obviously not going to move for the same money. So they get a couple bucks more an hour. And, you know, sometimes you can't blame them if they're in that situation.
Well, yeah, but there's a flip side to that. You know, you may have the, I had technicians because I ran a good sized commercial shop and, you know, we got busy sometimes. And let's face it, as a business owner, doing reviews is not your favorite thing to do.
No,
it's a lot of work, especially when you're a smaller contractor. You got to do it all yourself. There is software that helps you do evaluations. But sometimes, you know, one of your good techs just kind of gets forgotten. And what I used to do is when I interviewed and I ultimately hired a technician, I said, look, we do our reviews once a year, but we get busy. So it's your job. If you think that you have elevated your skill level and your work habits to a point where, you know, you making more money is justified, you have to talk to me. It's not that if I don't give you a raise, it's not because I don't want to. I just may just not have time to get to it. It's that way.
Yeah, you know, you kind of hit the nail on. I mean, it absolutely. I love to hear that type of leadership style because, you know, and we'll even ask people, you know, hey, have you talked to your, you know, have you talked to your boss about getting a raise? You've been here at this shop for 9 months now. Have you spoken up? And granted, is that warranted? You know, have you been doing the work the right way? Have you been putting in the effort? You're doing quality work in the field, you know, then, you know, I would suggest maybe going to your boss and kind of talking about it. And it takes, you know, that leadership style on your end, as well as the open-mindedness to have that discussion. And let's say the person, they're on the edge. They may not be warranted a raise at that point, but they're still a good worker. And you're not going to look differently upon them after that point, you know. So it really depends on the kind of the leadership style of yourself and as well as the employee, if that's warranted or not, and if they have the right attitude moving forward.
Well, and there's ways to have that conversation with your boss. You know, I'm getting ready to put together what I call it's a 5-day workshop called the BEST workshop. And one of the things I'm covering in that workshop is how to have a conversation with your boss about money, right? Mm-hmm. It's uncomfortable. Yeah. Nobody likes it, but there is a way to have a conversation with your boss. You know, if you say, hey, boss, I need to make more money. They're going to say, well, why? And they say, well, because I'm a superstar. Okay. So, you know, you start, that's the wrong way to do it. But if the boss says you're not quite ready yet, the way to follow up on that is cool. Well, give me a list of things that I need to attain or accomplish in order to make my value to a point where you're going to feel really good about paying me more, you know? And then just shut up and see what they say.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, and again, it goes back to, you know, the individual and, you know, what's their background prior to that in terms of having professional training to have that conversation, you know, and I don't know if that's part of the curriculum when people are in the apprenticeship. I mean, if they're in a union shop, they're getting, it's a little different story, but if it's a non-union thing, you know, they may or may not have had the education to have those types of discussions. So it just may not have. And then again, if they haven't had the education to do it, you know, are you bringing it up in the right way? Are you setting up, you know, hey boss, is there, you know, do you have an available time that you and I could sit down and have a discussion? Or are you guys loading the truck up with material and you're saying, hey, can I get a raise? You know, it's two different types of conversations for sure.
Yeah. You know, that's a good point to bring up. You touched on that really quickly, Blake, and I want to point that out. What Blake just touched on is a little different in a union shop. So those of you guys out there that, you know, hear Blake and I talking about union, non-union, there's really two different channels you can go when you go into skilled trades, and they both have advantages. But what Blake was alluding to, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Blake, but within a union, that conversation, you still can have those conversations with an employer, but there's a heck of a lot more structure with respect to your pay, because it's based on time. It's based on usually a structured apprenticeship program. So you kind of know where you're going to be within year 1, 2, 3, and 4. Non-union, not so much, because it's much, much different. Is that about accurate?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, exactly what I was saying. And I mean, I know a little bit about, you know, not only working with unions now, is my dad was in the union in the IBEW for 30 years. So, you know, I'm familiar with it. I actually personally worked within a union contractor out of college as a project engineer and a assistant estimator. So we were a design build union electrical shop. So I was always dealing with the wages and this and that when it came to estimating or what have you. So yeah, it's that's exactly what I was alluding to in terms of that structure and pay.
Awesome. Well, we've been on here for about 39 minutes.
Okay.
What I want to do is let's do a quick wrap up. What parting words would you give, Blake, to for two audiences? What parting words would you give for the parents of maybe a high school senior that they're just now, or junior, they're just now starting to have conversations about, you know, what their son or daughter is going to do for the rest of their lives?
Right.
What parting guidance would you give to that demographic? And then what parting guidance would you give to a current technician working in the field?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I mean, as far as the parents are concerned, talking to their, you know, their high school senior or junior or what have you, you know, getting into the trades going out of high school and getting into a trade school to become an electrician or an HVAC tech or what have you, a plumber, is an amazing opportunity to, you know, build your skill set, to have a career. You know, really anywhere you go in the country, they need people like you. And it doesn't mean that your son or daughter isn't going to go to college, if that's, you know, what you see, because most of the people, at least half that I work with, all have degrees. You know, they all have college degrees. Even the field techs, they got mechanical engineering degrees. They got electrical engineering degrees. You know, they got business degrees. So it doesn't mean they're not going to get a degree. And, you know, it's just the point is that there's an option other than college initially. Mm-hmm. You know, if they get an apprenticeship and they're working, they can work on, you know, getting college at especially nowadays with technology, they can go to school online if they wanted to, for crying out loud, you know. So I think just the message to the parents is be open to the conversation that, you know, going to trade school instead of college is okay. And it doesn't mean that they're not going to go later on, because like I said, I work with plenty of individuals, at least half that have degrees.
Okay.
And then on the HVAC, you know, on the field guy, you know, the message to them, I think overall is, and I know it's hard because you said it earlier, you know, 20 something year old, they need to make more money, what have you, but try and sit down and have a goal planning session with your career. You know, I do meet technicians that are been in the field for 30 years and they love it, and that's where they're going to end, you mm-hmm. know, and that's fine. But really have a plan, you know, at least a general outline of what you're thinking you want to do, because it's going to help you not only in the short term, but in the long term, because, you know, nowadays, especially the technicians or what have you, are getting multiple calls all day long from recruiters and people like myself. People from companies have internal recruiters as well. I'm sure they're getting bombarded, and it's very easy to kind of change jobs every year or two.
Right.
If you have this long-term goal in mind, it's going to allow you to be a little bit more selective to think, you know, hey, you know what, is this the best career move for myself to go from company A to company B? You know, look at the whole picture involved. You mentioned, you know, moving from company A to B. Well, that company B has a lot of work now, but what's their backlog like? You know, how much work are there? How many hours a week are there technicians? You're making $2 more an hour, but you're only working 30 hours a week.
Right.
You know, so really have the goal session and outline in mind, because I think it's going to help you not only in the short term, but in the long term in really guiding your career moves, mm-hmm. you know, in the industry.
Well said. So that is it. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I very much look forward to continuing to connect with you. Please don't hesitate to send me messages on LinkedIn. I'm on there all the time. Or you can reach out to me on my email. I'm at mking@processchilleracademy.com. And until next week, when I give you the next installment, I wish you a great week. And I will connect up with you again soon. Take care now. Bye-bye.